Between 1970 and 2020, the average household size in Wisconsin has dropped from 3.22 people to 2.36 people. That's according to U.S. Census data. The national numbers show a similar downward trend, but Wisconsin household sizes are now lower than the national average. Now that switch, 3.22 to 2.36, might not sound that far apart, but it represents a significant dip, especially when it comes to the housing stock that's available and attractive to individual people and to families with smaller households. A new report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum dug into this census data and explored some of the factors behind the shrinking household size over the last half century. Looked at why Wisconsin households are decreasing faster than national numbers. Our next guest is an expert on housing in the state. He joins us for a look at a mismatch between the size of our families and the size of our available housing. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you? How big is your household? How does that compare to the one you grew up in? And are you finding a house or an apartment of the right size to match the number of people? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kurt Paulson is an associate professor in the Department of Planning and Landscape Architecture at UW-Madison. His research focuses on affordable housing policy, municipal finance, and land use. Kurt, thanks for joining us in the studio today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Now, those numbers seem pretty small and not that far apart, but it's a pretty big deal, right? This dip in household size.
Right. And if you multiply it by the millions of households, right, it becomes quite a demographic shift. And so what it means is that you're having a rise of 1- and 2-person households in the state of Wisconsin. And over the last decade, we've actually shrunk in terms of the 3-, 4-, and more-person households. And so that means it's both seniors who are staying in their homes, right? And obviously, maybe a spouse or partner has died, the kids have moved on. But it's also young folks just starting out.
And Wisconsin seems to be decreasing at a faster pace than the country as a whole. Are we just older in general in Wisconsin? Is that the big part of the story there?
Yes. I mean, we like to joke about it, but Wisconsin is kind of old and cold, right? So mm-hmm. We're not seeing a lot of the same in-migration that we're seeing in Texas, California, Florida, right? So most of the people who move here move when they're younger. They move for jobs, and then they tend to stay here. So our demographics are aging at a faster rate than other southern states, and our housing stock is also aging because we're just not building enough to keep up with demand.
And do we know about where in the state household sizes are changing? Is this like a global phenomenon in Wisconsin, or like a statewide phenomenon in Wisconsin, or is this concentrated in urban areas, or what?
It's actually both, but it's for different reasons. So in a lot of our rural areas and small towns, household size is going down because people are aging and young people are moving out. Here in Dane County and in Milwaukee, household size is decreasing largely because young people are moving in, right? So in some ways, it's where you capture people on that circle of life, we would say, right? When you're young, you start out in an apartment, you have a job, right? And then you eventually maybe meet someone, you have a family, you have a house, then you want to downsize, you become a senior. So it's largely driven by these demographic shifts, older population, and younger people are not having as many children, and they're not having them as early in life as previous generations.
Talking to Kurt Paulson, professor and expert on housing at UW-Madison, looking at a mismatch here in the state, not just in Wisconsin, but definitely in Wisconsin. Smaller household sizes, smaller families, houses not keeping up. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. All right, Kurt, that's the household size. Now, what about the buildings, the apartments and houses that are in existence that these people want to live in?
Right. So I think the term mismatch is a really good way to think about it, right? Because households come in all different sizes, flavors, income levels. And to make a balanced housing market, you need housing of every different size and type. So the market for years, given our zoning regulations and the financing, really preferred that large kind of new build suburban style house. So 3 or 4 bedrooms, right? 2,500 to 3,000 square feet. We build a lot of those, the large single family homes. And then we build a lot of more urban apartments, 1 or 2 bedrooms. So a lot of planners, designers, policymakers are looking at what we call the missing middle. That's that in-between product. We used to build a lot of in cities, right? This could be everything from boarding houses to what we call granny flats or accessory dwelling units. It's the duplex, the townhouse, the condos we were talking about. We just don't build a lot of that and have not for 40 years. And so when you have a one or two person household, whether a senior or a young person, you can either rent an apartment, and even apartments are difficult if it's a two bedroom. That's a lot of square footage. That's an expensive house. Or there's just not that much households that want to buy that large single-family house or can afford it.
Now, let's talk about somebody maybe early in their career, and they're thinking, yeah, I want to do the old thing, partner up. That's two people, have a kid or two to bring it up to three or four. Can you talk about what options are out there or not out there when it comes to graduating up through the housing they would want?
And that's a good way to put it. So if I think about my generation, my parents' generation, baby boomers, first-time home buyers or that entry-level house would have been a smaller house to own, like two or three-bedroom, maybe 1,200 to 1,500 square feet, the kind of older house we grew up in. That doesn't exist, or it's in short supply, or it's really expensive. So what we see in the data is that millennials in particular, right, 25 to 34-year-olds, they are at peak home buying years, peak childbirthing years, they're delaying having children and getting married because there's no place to buy. And it's hard to have children in a two-bedroom rental in a downtown environment.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Michael is with us in Appleton. Michael, hello.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. So I'll try to condense this. I'm a two-person household. I'm a single dad. I'm 35, but I had my child early at 20, so a lot earlier than a lot of the people I went to school with. Another thing I've noticed, in addition to issues with housing availability or affordability, and it's especially hard to save when rents are increasing and there's fewer affordable places available near the jobs, but also that a lot of people that I graduated with, or a lot of young people generally, are going out of state, often after graduating college or something like that, is places like Minnesota with like paid family medical leave, stronger worker protections, childcare programs that are through the state, free breakfast or free meals. All those things, you know, even something as small as like legal cannabis, I know have made a number of neighboring states especially very attractive to a lot of folks that I know.
Michael, thanks a lot for sharing your story. Michael said basically five different things that could be subjects of entire half-hour conversations. Kurt, I want to start with one early on there, people paying so much in rent that they can't save up for down payment to buy.
Right. And so it's a double whammy, right? Because the product is not there. The kind of lower priced starter home is not there. And your dollars go a lot less far because interest rates are high. It's actually a triple whammy. And then you can't save for the down payment because rent is high. And to Michael's point, I think it is a workforce recruitment and retention issue because young folks, if they can't find homes to buy in Wisconsin communities, they're going to move to other states. And so growing our population base, you know, I hear all across the state, right? We've got jobs, we can't get people. Well, you can't get people if you don't have housing. And I'll just say one more thing,
sure.
Which is he said he was a single dad. Mm-hmm. And so anyone who is a single parent has a lot of challenges because you just can't put the income together necessarily to buy a house. So one of the structural barriers is what would happen if we said a couple of single parents could buy a place together and kind of share cooking and living expenses, kind of pool your resources like we used to do. Oftentimes, in the zoning ordinances, you can't live together unless you're a biological family.
Thanks again for that call, Michael. And I wanted to talk about the role of zoning in all this. I keep hearing concerns about you can't have that grandma flat or what other auxiliary building where one person can rent from you. Boarding houses, I think, are probably out of the picture in a lot of communities because of zoning. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yep.
We've zoned out a lot of potential solutions here, right?
Right. And so cumulatively over the last really 100 years, a lot of that kind of flexible, more urban housing product of the boarding house, right? That's where people used to live. My mom would talk about my grandma taking in boarders in the 1920s, this is what people did. and boarding houses have been zoned out. Again, that accessory dwelling unit. And then the other issue we might want to address is the zoning defines single family housing, and it defines what is a family. So again, if you had four or five young people or seniors who want to live together to share living expenses, that's one way to make it affordable. Oftentimes they are prohibited from doing that by the zoning because the zoning wants that kind of younger nuclear family with children.
We're talking to Kurt Paulson, associate professor in the Department of Planning and Landscape Architecture at UW-Madison, looking at household size in Wisconsin. It's shrunk faster in the last 50 years than the rest of the country, and what that means for housing, the size of houses and apartments not always matching up with the sizes of the households. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen the effects of smaller household sizes? When you look for a place to live, is there something that's the right size for you, whether it's just you or you and one or two or other three family members? Have you tried to set up a roommate scenario? Was that available to you? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk about housing in Wisconsin and a mismatch between what's available and what the average household size is as over 50 years, according to a new Wisconsin Policy Forum analysis, our average household size has gone down over the last 50 years or so. Kurt Paulson stays with us, associate professor in the Department of Planning and Landscape Architecture at UW-Madison. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your experiences, maybe your solutions. Go back to your calls now with Carrie in Kronenwetter. Carrie, hello.
Hi. I just have a point to make. A lot of communities have a minimum square foot requirement in regard to how large of a home you can build. And this translates into what they get in property taxes, you know, as they're based on the square footage of a house. My husband and I were in our 60s, and we had to get permission to build a 1,500 square foot house.
And did you get that permission, Carrie?
Yes, we did, but it was the bare minimum that they would let us do.
Interesting. Carrie, thanks so much for sharing that point and your story. Kurt?
Yeah, I've heard this around the state. This is true up in Kronenwetter. I've heard it in Adams County, a lot of smaller towns, rural areas. They have these minimum sizes, largely a relic of the past in zoning, where they really wanted to maybe avoid overcrowding, or maybe near a college campus they don't want kind of a party house. But as Carrie's points out, this really inhibits housing choices for people, whether they're seniors or young people starting out. And so one of the easiest things we can do as a state is have local governments just eliminate minimum housing sizes. You know, if you say, she said 1,500 square foot, that's three bedrooms. That really limits who can live there to a family that's large enough or has enough income to afford it. You know, what is wrong, I always say, with an 800 square foot house? A little two bedroom, one bath, the type of cottages you see in every neighborhood that was built before 1950? That's kind of that starter home, that move down house for seniors, in the same way that there's frequently minimum sizes on apartments. And for a young person starting out, or a person who doesn't want to own a car and wants to live close to downtown, there's nothing wrong with a 400 or 500 square foot apartment, right? So we've really kind of squeezed out that kind of flexibility in housing sizes to allow everyone who wants to kind of choose the housing that fits their size. So this is a great call from Carrie, right? Across the state, we're really shooting ourselves in our foot by having a minimum house size. There are building codes, right, which will stop an overly small house. So there's still building codes. I would say, though, that within the zoning and the subdivision codes, get rid of minimum house sizes.
Carrie, thanks a lot for that call. Something I think you and I have talked about in the past, Kurt, is, okay, even if it's allowed, do builders want to build smaller houses these days, or is there more money in it for them to make the bigger stuff?
Well, it's a chicken and egg thing, right? Because if I'm a builder, there's plenty of opportunities to build the kind of custom, higher-end luxury housing. But if we think of the single-family market, there's a lot of developers who want to build that kind of smaller product that people want, right? There's a huge demand for what we might call a cottage cluster or a kind of a more carriage-style house for seniors, for young folks. So it's a matter of economics, right? If the minimum zoning says a 10,000-square-foot lot, that's about a quarter of an acre, and if I'm paying $90,000 for the land and the infrastructure, there's no way you're going to build a small house on an expensive lot. So one of the things we're saying around the state, we're seeing a lot of cities and counties really move into this area, is can we reduce the lot sizes, allow more flexibility in setbacks and housing types? You can bring down that price of the lot, and then developers can respond by building that kind of more custom, smaller home product. If you're in the Madison area, there's a cottage cluster out on the west side called Chapel View. These are really small houses on small lots, and they're selling like hotcakes because there's a demand for people to buy either that, you know, first house as starting out or that kind of move down house after the kids move out.
Let's go back to our callers. Jim is with us in Iola. Jim, hi.
Hi. It was an interesting conversation that you're having here. I was talking to the person that answered, and this was like in the early to mid 70s that when I was growing up, I lived at home with my folks. My dad worked at Wisconsin Electric, and he'd be hooking up all these neighborhoods. And I remember him one night in particular talking about there was a plot of land southeast side of town where, Vans Construction, that was the name of the business, were putting up homes, three-bedroom, 1,200 square feet, you know, box shape, 30 by 40-foot size homes. And that they had different crews building these things. You know, you had the, they put the foundations in and, you know, frame it up and all that stuff. And to get to my statement here, they were opening up like one house a day in the mid-70s. I remember him talking about that. And, well, then the weird thing is years later, I bought one of those houses. Okay. And, you know, they're all kept up really nice. You know, these houses now have appreciated in value over $200,000, $250,000. And one went up for sale across the street from me and was sold the first day.
Wow. Jim, thanks a lot for sharing that experience. Do we make them like that anymore, Kurt?
No, and that's a great story, right? Mm-hmm. That's a classic illustration of what we used to build. We used to build that three-bedroom, 1,200 square foot, right? And when you build a large subdivision and you can kind of almost assembly line the framing crews, the contractors, the basements. Right, the most famous example is, of course, on Long Island,
Levittown,
yep. Right, where you would just mass produce housing, and in particularly the post-war period in the 70s, when you build a lot of housing, that housing becomes affordable, mm-hmm. Right? And so, we've also had some shakeout in the construction industry after the great financial crisis. A lot of people left the industry, so the total number of people employed building housing in the state of Wisconsin is a lot less today than it was in 2005, even though we've added 500,000 people. So even if we kind of waved our magic wand and we said we want to build a lot more housing, smaller lots, we also need to retrain and regrow the workforce of people to build those houses. Now, there is some possibility, innovation, that you could build those units in a factory, right, where you can have some robots, you have better climate control because Wisconsin is hard to frame other than 6 months in the year, and maybe deliver and assemble those products on site. So that's where we need to innovate and get back to building a lot of that kind of entry-level housing, because when you don't build it for 50 years, boy, you really notice it when it's gone.
Thanks for that call, Jim. Mike joins us now in Beaver Dam. Mike, hello.
Hi, thanks for having me. And I just wanted to ask Kurt some advice. I have a younger family and a 20-year-old who's in college, and he actually is not able to find any housing. And so we actually took him and his girlfriend in to our own home, and, you know, they're living in a basement apartment pretty much. And so I'm just wondering if he has any advice for parents such as myself with kids in this situation.
And, Mike, where is he going to school?
He's actually going to a technical college for automotive.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Mike. Just wondered how far the commute might be. Yeah. Kurt, any thoughts?
Well, this is funny because I also have a 20-year-old son in college, and we were talking about his housing yesterday. He's up in St. Paul, and much like at UW campus here, you know, the shortage of housing affects students, too, because in whether it's in Beaver Dam or in Madison, there's just a shortage of units everywhere. And so the kind of cheaper, low-amenity housing that a lot of us lived in as students, that's just not available because, you know, think of Madison, where families want to live in the same houses that students do. So the advice I would give to everybody is, unless we come together to solve this housing shortage, you better be prepared for your kids coming back to live with you. Well, the other solution is, you know, allow a bunch of students who may be near a technical college or a university to rent a home together or to move in together and share living expenses, right? And again, you can understand why, especially when a college town, you want to avoid the parties. But if you're concerned about parties or traffic, regulate for that. Don't regulate for the number of people who can live together. I mean, one of the ways to solve this problem of single-person households, right, is to allow more people to live together in a less-than-traditional relationship in the house.
Mike, thanks for that call. Just our last half a minute or so, Kurt, do you get the sense that policymakers at state and local levels are starting to see this as a problem and take it seriously?
Yes. I mean, you see around the state that every local official, they say housing is their biggest issue, and they understand that we can't keep doing what we've done. We have to open up the flexibility to allow more people to live together, to create that condo for seniors to move down into, to open up that single-family home, to allow smaller houses on smaller lots. And there was recent legislation at the state that gives municipalities and developers a lot of financial resources to make those zoning and subdivision reforms to free up our housing supply.
Kurt, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
That's Kurt Paulson with UW-Madison's Department of Planning and Landscape Architecture talking about a mismatch between household size and house and apartment size in Wisconsin.